Episode 305 of the Pilot Podcast takes off now. Fly with Garmin Avionics, then grab your mobile device and make the Garmin Pilot app your cockpit companion. Get advanced functions you'll use before, during, and after every flight, including updating your aircraft's databases and logging engine data. Plan, file, fly, log with Garmin Pilot. The Pilot to Pilot Podcast is brought to you by Learn the Finer Points. Use the link below to save 10% off their ground school app. All pilots like to have the big weather picture when they're flying, and that's why I use SiriusXM Aviation. I moto check things like fronts, air mets, sigmets, turbulence, pyreps, and more while I'm pre-flighting and while I'm en route. This gives me and my passengers the most comfortable flying experience. And now with the latest offer from SiriusXM, there's never a better time to upgrade your next flight with the Garmin GDL52 portable receiver to bring SiriusXM and ADS-B weather plus traffic into your cockpit. SiriusXM Aviation is offering a $400 rebate on new receivers purchased by July 31st. The GDL52 is compatible with Garmin Pilot and ForeFlight. Take advantage of this great offer and fly with the weather I count on for every flight. To learn more, visit sporties.com/SXM offer. That's sporties.com/SXM offer.
Hey guys, my name is Katie McKee. I'm a pilot and I put out content on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and try to help the aviation community.
Aviation, what is going on and welcome back to the Pilot to Pilot Podcast. My name is Justin Seams and I am your host. Today's episode is with Pilot Katie McKee. Pilot Katie is how she goes on Instagram, and you can follow her for some really great tips on becoming a pilot. She has a great career so far ahead of her, and she has an ultimate goal, which you'll have to hear in this podcast, but her outlook on where she is and how she's attacking it is just the exact outlook that you need to have in this industry. Enjoy where you're at, and maybe you can stay there forever. If not, you can always look on and see 121 in the world. See 121 in your future. Now, speaking of 121, if you follow me on Instagram, which you should, at Pilot to Pilot, you'll notice that I posted a reel where I am leaving my current job. I'm no longer going to be flying the Latitude. I'm no longer going to be flying for the fractional company that I'm working for, and I will be leaving for a 121 job. Yeah, it's not April Fool's. I could have posted this on April Fool's. I probably should have. Would have been funny, but it's true. I am done flying the Latitude. I am done with the company that I'm at, and I'm moving on. So bigger and soon to see if it's better things ahead. We'll find out. We're starting soon. More to come. I'm sure I'll have more of a podcast on this specifically. But all good memories, all good thoughts, no bad feelings toward former companies. Just right place, right time. It was the time to do it. So here we are, Aviation. I hope you enjoy this episode. It's a great one with Pilot Katie. And without any further ado, here's Pilot Katie. Katie, what's going on? Welcome to the Pilot to Pilot Podcast.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you on. It's going to be fun. We'll have a good little chat.
Yeah. I'm sure we can talk about airplanes.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to talk about airplanes, so it shouldn't take too long. Who knows? Maybe we'll be here 5 hours.
Yeah.
But first thing I always ask everyone is, why aviation? Why did you want to get into this industry?
Yeah, so my dad was actually an A-10 pilot, and he works for a major airline now. And when I was in college, I started college running track and cross country at Georgia Tech. And then I kind of, like, 2 years into that was like, okay, what do I actually want to do, like, when I grow up, you know, other than just sports? And so I was looking at trying to figure out, like, where do I actually want to go to college? How do I want to pay for it? So I started looking at the Guard. I ended up in the Army National Guard. And then through my time after I commissioned active duty, I kind of just fell into flying, not on the military side, but more as a hobby. So I was stationed at Fort Sill in Oklahoma, and this was right around when Combat Arms opened to women. So there was a lot of us that were just kind of like the first wave of that, and it was a challenging experience. So I started flying kind of as an outlet. And I remember my dad gave me the advice. He's like, if you start learning to fly and you hate it, like, your private pilot license looks good on a resume anyways, you know, just because it shows that you can finish something and you have like a certain aptitude or whatever, something to talk about. And if you like it, it's a good career. So I started learning to fly in Altus, Oklahoma. And I had a retired Air Force colonel that was like teaching me on the side. So I had a great experience with instructing and everything. And then when I did my solo cross countries, I just like fell in love with it. And that was it, you know? it was like, okay, I could do this every day.
So you're in college. You are a runner. You probably had a bunch of dreams and aspirations to keep running in college. But did you stop after a couple of years? Did you totally give it up? Or did you kind of stay in college, finish that, and join ROTC or that path?
Yeah, so I did the Georgia Tech thing. I did track and cross country. And I honestly, like, I'm not good enough to be like a D1 athlete. I just like worked hard. So I was like able to get there. And honestly, like, I was way out of my league. Like, the girls that run, you know, really well in college, like, they go to the Olympics and I'm nowhere near that. So, I mean, I still run for fun now, but it's like, I go for like a little trot, you know, it's not like a big deal. But I finished my degree at Georgia Southern. So I transferred there. I did ROTC and then I commissioned as an officer through their program. And it was a really good fit for me because I needed like the structure. I need goals. You know, I kind of have that like type A mindset that most of us do. So it really worked well for me. And then like in the Army, you do a lot of running. So it kind of worked out.
You're like, it's pretty easy. I can do this.
Yeah. I was like, I can run. And that's the funny thing is now I look back and I'm like, I really wish I had gone like Air National Guard and just been a pilot. But at the time, you know, running and like doing all the Army like hardcore stuff sounded really fun, which it's not. Like, spoiler, it's not fun. You know?
You think it's fun, it's not, so don't.
Yeah, like sleeping in the rain is not cool. Like, yeah. Like, much as that might sound like a fun thing to do, it's not.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, so ended up just kind of continuing with that and then commissioned. And the running thing like helped a lot with the Army, but it's not, you know, something I do. It's just a hobby now, so...
Love it. I can totally relate to you talking about D1 athlete. I played football at Ohio State and I was on the bench. I watched a lot, but I can relate to what you said. Where it's like you're really good in high school or at your level and then you keep moving up and just the talent that you keep going up every single kind of rank you move up. You're just like, holy smokes. Like I was good, but like, dang, that guy's really good. And you're kind of like, wow. It was a big reality check going to Ohio State for the first time and seeing the other quarterbacks over there. And I was like, all right, well, I guess this is as far as I'm gonna make it because there's no way I can beat that guy out.
That's a huge program. Yeah, like I mean anything D1 athletics is like it's a whole different world. Yep. And awesome, glad I experienced it, but like I was really out of my league, like I said, it's like this is not where I belong. So but I mean you learn so much through it, like you do get the skills and you work hard and you get some help, self-efficacy, like accomplishing those things. So I think that, you know, translates to everything in life.
And you can make really good friendships because you do hard things with people. You kind of bonded for life. So I'm sure your friends you have there, it's like, you remember when we had that one track practice at 8 a.m. or 6 a.m.? It's like, oh, yeah. So yeah.
The trauma bond is real.
Yeah. And I'm sure you have some trauma bonds with the Army as well.
Yeah.
When I played football, all of our workouts were seemed like they're military based. Would you say your experience in the military versus D1, not was there one harder than the other, but would you say they're very similar in how they kind of go through mentality of working you out and pushing you as hard as you can?
Okay, so the military is harder. Like, especially for me, like, I'm not a real bulky person, you know, like, I women are not built to, you know, hold as much weight physically as men. So, like, me throwing on a 100-pound pack and trying to walk around for 5 hours, it's going to be a lot harder than a guy who's 240 pounds, like, doing that, you know, just, like, mathematically. So I definitely think it's harder. The thing with the military that was really good for me and what I realized is like, as an athlete, yes, we did hard things and we pushed ourselves and like we were uncomfortable, we were in pain, but there was still this element of like, you can take care of yourself afterward. You always did it hydrated. You always had some level of enough sleep, you know, like in the military, like I've been awake for like 3 days at a time and you just get to this point where, and the biggest like lesson I got from the military is just like, you're gonna be fine. Like you can handle way more than you think you can. And that was really good for me because I kind of needed that. Like I didn't realize how much I was kind of like, I don't know if the word's like privileged or like I had it easier than I thought I did. And then when I got to the military, it's just like, we don't care. Like, you're sick. We don't care. You know, like, you're hurting. Walk it off. Like, and that was actually really good for me because you realize, oh, okay, actually, yeah. I mean, I can do this. It just sucks, you know? So you do all the harder things. And also, like, I think I was at a level that I really shouldn't have been either in the military. Like, I just kind of pushed myself to be able to do some of the, you know, training and things that I did with the guys and, you know, some of the different schools and stuff like that. It was hard, you know, and I just pushed myself to a level where I was like able to complete it. But you do it without water, without food, enough food or good food, without sleep. And you just kind of go to another level psychologically, you know? So it's a whole different thing, but I thought it was amazing. Like, I, again, would not want to do it forever, but that lesson where you're like, I'll be fine. Like, I'm going to survive this, you know, it's just going to really suck.
And looking back at your options at the time, when you made that choice to go Army, was that with the idea that you would become a pilot, or was this kind of solely separate, just like, I'm going to join the military, and aviation really wasn't in the picture at that moment?
Yeah, not in the picture at all. I honestly was just thinking about, like, I want to pay for college without any loans. I really did not know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I wanted my major to be. I had no idea. And so because of that, I wanted to not have loans, you know, like, I just wanted to give myself choices by not putting myself in a situation where it's like, well, you picked this career and now you have student loans, so you kind of have to make it work. So I just kind of did the military thing. I did ROTC. And when I was getting into it, the Army sounded cool, you know, like, that's honestly all it was. And then, you know, they did like different PT tests and stuff. And I was really into that, like, hardcore working out thing at the time. So it was a good fit for me. But like I said, looking back, if I could go do the Air Force, I totally would. I didn't even like, I wasn't even interested in flying at the time though. So it's like, how do you know?
So with your dad being a being flying for a legacy or a major airline, did every kind of pilot, my dad flew for a legacy as well. He flew for American. He's since retired, but my life was all sports. It was never around airplanes. It was never anything else. Like, I never had aviation pushed on me. I was kind of just like, hey, this is what I do. If you have any questions, like, feel free to ask. But I never flew in a small plane. I never did anything until I decided to do it on my own. Did you have a similar experience with that? Or was your dad kind of like, hey, you know, that plane, we can go fly those planes right now if you want to?
Yeah, it was kind of similar. And I think that's the better way to do it. Like, I think anything that your parents push on you, you're just automatically not going to want to do. So he was really open and just, if you want to go flying, let me know. He owned a Citabria at one point for like a cut, like maybe 6 months. My grandfather was also a pilot, and my grandfather like built airplanes. He wasn't like the safest pilot, so we were not allowed to fly with him. He was kind of a wild man.
Your dad's like, do not go in grandpa's plane, whatever you do.
Literally, he's like, we'd go stay with them for the summer. And he's like, you're not allowed to go fly with grandpa.
Granddad's crazy. Like,
okay. Yeah. Yeah, he has crashed. He's not with us anymore, but he crashed a few airplanes.
Oh, no.
Like, he's a wild man. Yeah. We had a couple times where we're like, oh, there's a plane up in a tree again.
This is grandpa. Yeah, he'll be fine.
Just Korean War vet, just like doing whatever he wants.
Full send, so. Yeah.
Yeah, full send, exactly. So, but, and I flew with my dad like maybe once or twice, but the funny thing that we kind of joke about my dad now is he like is totally the fighter pilot thing. So he did not even realize, he'd take us out and he'd just like rip acrobatics and we'd be about to puke in the back seat, like not having fun at all. And he did not know, because he's like, oh, this is pretty like benign, you know? So now we've kind of taught him, like, when you take people for rides, it's like 30 degrees of bank and under. Like, just keep it
smooth.
Under control.
Be smooth. Yeah.
Smooth. Like, smooth, we did the same thing to my sister in law. He like almost made her throw up. And then we were like, all right, dad, that's enough.
You know? Gotta chill. You're going to be the crazy grandpa.
I mean, he was very like supportive with it, you know, like when, like, he suggested it when I was in the Army, but he didn't push it at all. And I think that's the right way to do it. You know, it sounds like your dad kind of had a similar philosophy.
Absolutely, got to find on your own, and it's great if you're around it all the time. That's fine too, but you can still find on your own, and you don't have to do it early in life. You can always do it later in life and come back to it, whether in your 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever it is. So aviation will be there for you if you want to do it. That is for sure.
Right.
All right, so yeah, you mentioned that you were, oh sorry, keep going.
I have a couple friends like in Peachtree City where I went to high school where they have grown up around it. And I mean, it's just that's a good experience too. Like, some of them had 200 or 300 hours like when they were 18 years old, you know, and they do it as a career. So like, they've had great experiences too. But I think that, you know, their parents didn't really push it on them either. They just like gave them access to it, which is great because it's got to be your own thing that you're interested in.
Absolutely. Because it's a tough career. It's tough training. And if you start doubting yourself, you got a lot of money to pay off, like you said, with a loan. So it's like, you got to be serious about it.
Yeah, you got to be into it.
So aviation kind of came into the picture. You mentioned that you did some training in Oklahoma. What kind of tell you your thought process on choosing flight schools, choosing what you wanted to do, and choosing how to pay for it?
Yeah, so I was stationed at Fort Sill in Oklahoma, and I was just kind of looking for like an independent CFI around there that could be flexible and match my schedule. And there really was nothing in Lawton. I ended up driving to Altus about an hour away, which is where the Air Force Base was. And I found this one instructor in A-172, you know, just like the independent CFI thing. He was awesome. So that's kind of what I have seen and what I did. I found the best experience with that is like interview instructors, find one that matches your personality. And some of them have a ton of, I mean, he was a retired Air Force pilot, you know, he had thousands of hours, great instructor. And he was just kind of giving back in his retirement, you know? So they're out there. It's just kind of harder to find maybe, but if you kind of look in those independent or the flight clubs, that's maybe where they tend to be more. I talk a lot online about like 141 versus part 61. There's really no right answer or wrong answer. Like learning to fly is a huge accomplishment. I just think the information that I try to put out is like, there are kind of a lot of scams or bad experiences that people run into in the flight training process. So I try to put that information out so people can just make informed decisions. The way that I personally did it is I did it all part 61. I found independent instructors. I just paid as I went, and that seemed to work out really well. You know, most of them were very experienced instructors. They had flexible schedules. The planes were pretty well maintained because these guys with experience have no interest flying something really crappy. And it was just a good experience, you know, but like you got to interview the instructor because a lot of it is just personality and how you guys communicate as well. So, and also, you know, some people need more structure. Like I tended to study well on my own. I had just gone through the field artillery course, which was a ton of math and studying. So I was fine with just like teaching myself a nav log off of YouTube, you know. I think a lot of people have to do that anyways, even in big flight schools. I think you kind of have to like take the lesson and then go figure it out on your own and, you know, practice it and teach yourself a little bit to some extent. Like you see that later on in your career too, is sometimes you just get the manuals and then you just have to show up to the check ride prepared.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can't recommend enough to have additional resources as much as you can afford or whatever's free. There's a ton of free resources. There's so many YouTube videos that you can watch from multiple CFIs that can teach you holds, that can teach you nav logs, that can teach you whatever you want. So the resources are out there. And I also think it's great. Like CFIs have weaknesses too. Like this, your CFI might not be the best at teaching this one subject. So there's nothing wrong with you going out and getting that information from someone else, you know? So I think it's very important to do that. Shameless plug for the Ground School app from Learn the Finer Points. I don't even know who Jason Miller is, but they have the best app that I've ever seen, and you can do so much with it. So if you're training, check it out. It's amazing. I think they just came out with an instrument course, and they also have an oral test prep where he'll actually ask you questions. They have like pre-recorded questions and you can use someone else asking you questions, because I've always found that a CFI knows your weaknesses and they know how to phrase the questions, kind of give you hints. So if you have someone completely new asking you questions, it can kind of either stump you or you can prove to yourself that you have all the knowledge.
That's so true. And then also like even to that same point, just fly with someone else before your check ride, because I have seen sometimes people are super comfortable with their CFI and, you know, their CFI can word something a certain way and they know what they're asking them to do. Then they'll get into a check ride and the DP will ask them to do a maneuver and they won't even know what they're trying to get them to do. You know, it's just like, I haven't flown with anyone else before. I'm super nervous and I have no idea how to ask them, did you want me to land on the first stripe or the second, you know? And then they fail a check ride just because they genuinely did not know what was going on. So you kind of have to get yourself a little stressed out and uncomfortable, and that's going to help you feel better for the check ride anyway. So I totally agree with that.
So what was training like while you're trying to maintain active duty in the Army?
Yeah, it was a slow process. I kind of just did I soloed in Oklahoma. Then I went to Washington State. I found another independent instructor there who was another retired guy who did it for fun. And he like was building RVs on the side, super experienced, and trained with him and just kind of paid as I went until I got out of the Army. And I had my private pilot's license. And then I was in Florida at the time. And because I did a combination of guard and active duty, I had 80% GI Bill. So it actually did not cover as much as it would have just been to pay out of pocket, because I went to all these 141 schools and was like, you know, what would the delta be? And it was still a huge chunk because of their markup. Yeah. And the GI Bill changes a lot, so it could be completely different now. I know a lot of people use it and they've had good experiences. That would just, you know, with my term of service, like it just wasn't going to be that great for the whole training. So then I was trying to figure out, how do I pay for this? And do I want to go 141 and just like take out a loan for the rest of it? Or is there a way that I can get through this without any loans? Because again, I was still kind of like, you know, I don't know what the aviation career looks like. Like, I really love to teach. I honestly would just be a CFI my whole career if I could, if you could like pay the bills. But I didn't know what that was going to look like. So I wanted to keep it kind of low cost in the front end, so I could have choices if I hated it like 5 years down the road. So I was looking around, and the area that I lived in, Orlando, there was a couple really big light sport schools. So I am the kind of person that just goes to the airport. I recommend that to a lot of people. Now, aviation is like an older community. It's a kind of old school, you know, like they want to get eyes on you face to face. You just putting an application online for a lot of these lower hour jobs is not the best option. So I went to the airports, I talked to people, and I ended up finding this whole light sport CFI thing. And what that basically is you can have either a sport license or a private license, and then you get to 150 hours total time and a few other sub requirements, and then you can get your light sport CFI. And at that point, you're just teaching people to fly in what's basically like a 150 equivalent or a 152. So that's what I did. And the school that I was at, that they said, you know, if you give us a commitment to a certain amount of time as an instructor, and you work with the fueling and all these other things along the way through your training, we will give you the planes at cost to build up to 150 hours and beyond, you know, for whatever else I wanted to use. So they really helped me out. I ended up doing that route, got my light sport CFI. And then with the hours that I was building and everything else, like I didn't have to basically pay for any other flight time. No, I got my like my 50 hours of cross country for instrument. I had that as an instructor, you know, so I was paid to get that flight time legally, because the FAA doesn't see instructing as compensation for being a pilot. They see it as compensation for teaching. So that's the same reason that you can be a, you know, CFIA with a basic med. You don't need a second class medical because you're not being compensated as a pilot. So it's kind of a workaround, but you know, I was paid at 150 hours without a commercial license, without an instrument rating, to get all of the rest of my flight time. So it's insane. A lot of people don't know about it. And I, you know, like I said, this is not for everybody. If you're 260 pounds, like you may not be able to do a light sport, you know, unless your instructor is 110 pounds. Like,
not going to work out. So,
yeah. Like you're not going to get off the ground in that plane. So, and it's not as much as far as like people, you know, the student base. So you have to kind of build up your own student base. Like there are limitations to it, but it's just another option that you could use, you know, if you wanted to get through your time inexpensively.
I'm having a coughing attack where you're giving good information. No, that's crazy. I mean, I'm so far removed from that process and like thinking about getting paid to fly, and when you can and you can't get paid to fly, I'm just like thinking like, geez, it's like once you just make it and you get paid to fly, which you are now on the PC-12, it's just kind of like, ah, this is great. Don't have to worry about it. Of course, a pilot, it's all set. But you really do have to kind of, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's and make sure you're doing everything correctly, especially when it's not a traditional path like the one that you chose to go down. But more power to you. If you can find a way to pay for school and not have loans, which it really sounds like that was very important to you ever since you were in college, that's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that ask me questions about the loan thing again. I'm like, that was just my personal choice. Like, no hate to anybody that wanted to take out loans. That was just me, like, as a young woman, especially saying, like, eventually I want to have kids and be home with them. I wanted to just have options. You know, everybody's life is different and everyone's in a different place. So, you know, loans are not bad. I'm not saying that. Like, some people go to these bigger schools, they take out like $120,000 worth of loans, they get to a major airline really quick, and they pay it off quick. So just know what you're getting into. You know, that's my whole like platform. I'm just like informed consent, know what you're getting into. And I want people to love aviation. Like, I'm still so passionate about it and I still love it. And I know people that have had such a bad experience that they're like finally getting to the point that they're at an airline and they hate it. Like they're bitter and burnout because they've had bad check rides and they've had flight schools that have lied to them and they've had like all these delays and they have all these loans and it's just this nasty experience.
It all starts building up at one point. And there's gonna be multiple points in your career, especially early on, where you're like, man, being a major airline pilot is so far away. Like, I don't know if this is worth it. It's just going to be tough. So if you can do it with the least amount of financial stress, then that's amazing. Paying for it on your own is great. But I mean, let's be honest, not everyone has the ability to do that or the need or the want to do that. So it's not bad. You can always reach out to a financial consultant. They can always help you. RAA is great for that. They do it for free. They can tell you, hey, you could afford this if you do this and that, or maybe you should get loans. They will help you find the right loans for you, right? So you're not making sure you're taking out the bad loans. So always contact someone and seek help and seek guidance, because you'll find out in this industry that more people than not are willing to help you and help you avoid the mistakes that they've made. That's kind of what aviation is all about. You learn from other people's mistakes and then you hope that your mistake isn't too bad and then other people can learn from your mistake.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
So make a really, really bad mistake.
Right. Yeah. That's so true. Like that's basically what we're all trying to do here is not be the guy.
You know? Yeah. Well, you're the statistic. So statistics for you. I can't talk today. Yeah. When you got into this industry, did you have your eyes kind of set where you're like, all right, I'm gonna start flying? You realized you liked it on the cross countries. You're like, all right, I'm gonna be a major airline pilot, or was it more of like, I'm gonna keep doing this and see where I go?
Yeah, it was definitely the second one. So I basically was just like, I love flying. I just want to get paid and fly planes. Like, I don't really care if it's a Piper Cub or if it's a 767, you know. Now, I will say this is the one piece of advice looking back is I do think the best quality of life is probably at like a major airline or a larger company. So my route of just like, I'm just going to try to find something where I'm like home a lot and I love the job. I actually think that the best route is to get to a regional and get to an airline as quick as possible and just build seniority. Now, I just didn't want to be gone. Like, that's just where my life was at. I didn't want to be on the road. Now I'm kind of like, you know, if you're senior enough, you're not really on the road that many days and you have a ton of time off. So it's a trade-off. But I just kind of like was looking for the job that I enjoyed. It's all worked out and I love where I am now. But yeah, I was just kind of like finding my way through it, not following the standard path. You know, a lot of people ask me about the airlines and I'm like, I could go to an airline at any time. Right now, what I'm doing, I love more. So, that's not what I'm interested in, but I was kind of just going, okay, I flight instructed through like, you know, 2000 hours. Cause I was just like, I'm happy here, you know? And then I kind of went on to the next thing when I was like ready for something different. So I was not time building to get X, Y, and Z done at all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're preaching to the choir for me. I mean, that's kind of been my whole path too. My dad being a major airline pilot, I've seen that life. I kind of didn't think that's what I wanted. So I was, I was training for my CFI, then I did aerial survey, and then I did freight. And then now I'm doing corporate, but is this coming out? This one's coming out in, I gotta make sure I don't do anything. The big update. So this one's coming out. I'm actually quitting my job and I am moving on to a major airline. So
congratulations.
Thank you. But like you, I came to the realization that that's how you have the best quality of life. I don't think you can really beat pay. I don't think you can beat quality of life. Now, it might not be immediate. You might have to suffer through a couple years of reserve, or maybe you're not going to get your base. But once you get there and further down the road, you just can't beat it. It's like right now I have a 7 on, 7 off, and I do like that schedule, but the 7 days on are starting to get a little bit longer. I feel like I'm missing more of my kid. And then looking down the road, having the ability to just drop whatever you want, drop trips and be like, oh, it's going to play this football game on Friday. And you have the ability to just drop that trip, no questions asked, and you're good to go. So just can't turn away from it anymore. And made that. So it's crazy. Never thought I'd.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. So I was like, make sure this one comes out after my last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Company's like, we love that we found out on your podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be bad. That'd be really funny. No, sorry, guys. Actually, I'm not sorry.
No,
I'm just kidding.
No, that's really interesting because like we've had the same experience. And if I could, I think about, okay, you know, 1500 hours ago, like, or more when I hit 1500 hours, if I had gone to an airline right then with the way hiring was, I probably would have been at a regional for like 1 year. And then I probably would have been at Delta for like the past, you know, 6 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh crazy. Man, if I only knew.
You would have been set for life.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting hired, I think if you would have gotten hired, even me, if I would have gotten hired like a year or two ago, those people mm-hmm. are going to be so set. It's insane. They'll be wide body way before us if we go, but I can't complain. Where I was served a perfect service or role for what I needed at the time and needed even now. So I'm not upset about it. I wish it would have turned into what I thought it could have been, but you know, mm-hmm. you gotta make the decision and go. I felt like this is the last time. So we're doing it.
That's exciting. Yeah. So I guess that's a good piece of advice from both of us, which is just get to the regional, do the airline thing and just move up as quick as you can, because we definitely tried the quality of life was the goal. It sounds like for both of us, you know, and maybe not just like the career, aspiration or whatever the people think of the airline. Like we didn't have that as our heart set on it, but seems like it's actually the way to go.
So. Yeah. And what's crazy is you don't take into account that you're going to change. Your life mm-hmm. is going to change. What you want out of life is going to change. So some people may not change, but there's a good chance that when you have kids or when you get involved in other stuff in your community and you realize that you're missing some time and that's the route to go. So you just got to be prepared that what you want 6 years ago isn't going to be what you're going to want in the future. And it's okay with that. And hopefully that happens when you have the choices that are out there, right? Like things are starting to slow down a little bit right now. So when you have the opportunity to do it, I recommend just putting in your applications and giving the opportunity to say no, because if you don't give yourself the chance and you'll never know, it could always be a big what if.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, this industry has so many options, which is the really good thing, you know, so you've seen the corporate side and all these other parts, and now you're going to go to the 121 and see how you like that. And like, it may suck for the first 2 years, you know, but it may not, like it might be great the whole time. So
absolutely.
Hopefully it is.
Yeah. Anyways, back to you. Enough about me. I don't need to talk about it. <That's cool. laughs>
Let's take a break from today's episode to hear from our sponsor, RAA. Hey, Justin here. Ever wonder if your investments are soaring or falling short while you're busy conquering new heights? Introducing RAA's free investment goal calculator. It's more than just numbers, it's clarity on your financial journey. Get a clear snapshot of your current standing and chart the best path forward to your goals. Whether you're a seasoned investor or new to finance, this tool is a game changer. Check out RAA's free investment goal calculator at raa.com/pilot to pilot. That's raa.com/pilot to pilot. And now back to today's episode.
When you were doing your training, what was your least favorite part? Was it private? Was it instrument, commercial, CFI? What did you not like most when you were flying?
I don't know. I honestly loved all of it. Like, I really love the whole flight training part of aviation. Like, I think it's just really cool for someone to set a goal for themselves. I think it's such an accomplishment to learn to fly or to get your instrument rating or whatever it is. You know, CFII, I was kind of like not that enthused about it. I just kind of like checked the box. So maybe that one was like, I really haven't used it. I think I've put like one instrument student through, you know, but I was just like, whatever, I have it. I almost failed that one too, because I missed a note about like the airport being closed the first time I looked at it. He's like, do you want to look again? I'm like, yes, I do.
Well, I think you should look at this one right here.
Yeah. He's like, the big red thing that says no, you might want to pick that.
And it's like, we can try to fly there, but it's not.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that one would not be good to miss that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, but yeah, I liked all of it, you know, like, and my CFI initial, which like, it was kind of weird because I did CFI S, like light sport, and then I did CFI A, which is like what we think of real CFI. That's supposed to be like the nightmare check ride, you know, where it's like your oral is 7 hours and blah, blah, blah. And it really was so much easier for me because I had like 700 hours of dual given at that point, and I knew how to explain things and I knew how to talk through all these different things. So it was like a normal 2 hour oral and a 2 hour flight because I just like breezed through everything. So I feel super grateful about my whole training experience. Like, it really was fun, and you know, none of it really sucked all that much. I've always had good instructors. And that's always been my experience, and that's what I want for everybody else, you know? So that's why I try to just share what I learned along the way.
When, I guess I have more questions about you becoming a CFI for light sport. Did you have to take a check ride? Did you have to do, I don't really know the process for it. So I guess a better question is, explain how you get your light sport CFI. What's the legality to it?
Yeah, it's a weird little route. So you have to have, like I said, the sport or the private license to start. Then you build up to 150 hours and you have to have like a certain number of hours in a light sport and so forth. And then you take the FOI, the Fundamentals of Instruction written test, and then there's a light sport CFI written test. And then you take a CFI light sport check ride with a light sport DPE. And it's basically the same as like a like an initial CFI. Now, the oral was not as in-depth, I would say, as like an initial CFI, but the flight was the exact same maneuvers to the exact same standards, minus the commercial maneuvers. So it was like teaching a private pilot check ride kind of thing. So it's basically the same. You know, you got to be able to do all the maneuvers. You know, these airplanes are a little twitchier to like land. So you have to be able to land really softly. You get really good at landings and all the, you know, crosswind stuff. But yeah, you have to take the same check ride and then you just rip, do your instructing. And then eventually, you know, you have to take other CFI check rides to add on whatever you want. The FAA wasn't sure, honestly. They were like, we don't know if this is your initial CFI or not. So we're just going to have you do your like your CFI airplane as your initial, you know? So I was like, whatever. Okay. Yeah.
You're like, but I already did one. Please, please. Yeah. I don't want to do this again. Yeah. I don't want a long oral anymore. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how I kind of got when I was in my training life. I was like, I just do not want to take another check ride. If I can just start getting paid, like, please let me just stop taking check rides. And joke's on you, check rides never end, right? So just get used to it. That's my advice. It's just get used to check rides. They never stop. You're always going to have to do them once a year, every 6 months, whatever kind of route you go. So might as well just suck it up and just keep doing the check rides and get your
seat. Such a grind. They get easier in a sense that you're just like, okay, I know what to study, but they never get easier because you're always nervous and you never want to do it.
Yeah. Because there's always something that you could fail on. Like you can't know everything. It's always up to the instructor to ask the right questions. And if they have a bad day and you aren't on your best, then it could happen. It could happen to anyone. The best pilot in the world could fail check ride. So you just gotta do your best and try to be a good person because sometimes that can get you out of it.
Yeah. Be nice. Yeah. Talk to them about like their stock portfolio.
Right. Talking about their pool they're building in their backyard. Like, oh, that's a great idea. That's a beautiful pool.
Best pool ever.
Yeah. You're so smart. Yeah. When you were, oh my gosh, absolutely. When you are doing your first lesson in light sport and you have like 150 hours, what was that like kind of meeting as you're our pilot and being like, I'm here to teach you. I have so much experience. But in reality, you only had like 100 or 150 hours or 150 hours to 200 hours.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, the thing is like, you know, you are going to do stalls. You're going to do all these same maneuvers that a private pilot, you know, candidate's going to do. And some of the light sports, like, they're a little twitchier and they're like a little less stable in the stall. So like you're definitely doing the real thing, you know, and you have very little experience. The big thing that I learned, and this is like what I think all CFIs still need to do, is like you don't need to pretend that you have experience or knowledge that you don't have. You still have something to offer them. Like I still could instruct better in some ways because I can empathize with where they're at and I understand and remember what it was like to, you know, conceptualize a landing the first time. So I can point out to them, you know, what they're going to do wrong, like more than maybe someone who has 2000 hours of dual given or 10,000 hours or something because they just forgot. And to them, it's so easy to land a plane. They're like, why can't you figure this out? You know? But there were some things, you know, where students would ask me questions that I just didn't know. And this is where I think it's important to have mentors in aviation. So you call someone that knows what they're talking about and you ask them, and then you pass that knowledge on, you know? And that's, I never, you know, told my students I had experience. I didn't. I was very open with like, yeah, you're my first, whatever. And they can choose a different instructor if they wanted. Some people, like we would work together for a little bit. They would go with someone else or I would take someone else's students. Like we just would shuffle around to have the best personalities. But it worked out. I mean, I did a lot of discovery flights at first. So you're just kind of getting comfortable with like flying with somebody there that doesn't know when to talk and not talk. And they're like touching things they shouldn't be touching and all this stuff. And then you just kind of work through it, you know. Another CFI that has like 180 or 250 hours, like that's not that much more than 150. So like none of us in the beginning knew what we were doing, you know? it's the blind leading the blind, and you just have to, you know, in the field artillery, we have like a safety tee that we make, which is like, if the data doesn't fall inside of this, like we can't fire the round. And that's kind of what I talk to new CFIs about. I'm like, you have a safety tee. When you're new, it needs to be real big, you know? And then now, as I have more experience, I can go in higher winds with students, or I could, you know, have more students throughout the day or whatever it may be. You know, I could go teach someone spins, but like 150 hours, I would not be doing that. That's not wise. So you got to know your limits as a pilot at any point in your career and just be willing to accept that and have your, you know, personal minimums that you don't violate ever, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the hardest parts is trying to not push your limits, but find where your limits are, right? So at some point, if your limit is a 5-knot crosswind, that's just not realistic, right? You need to go to 10, you need to go to 15, you need to go whatever's legally able for that airplane, whatever it may be. So it's important to try to push to get there, because when you get to corporate, when you get to 121, you say, hey, I can't fly more than 10 knots, you're gonna be like, all right, well, you're not hired, you know? Yeah, you have to eventually find a way to safely push through those limits. It's really difficult setting personal limitations when you know there's like something you got to do eventually, or someone else is doing this, and maybe just accepting like it's just temporary. Go up through CFI, go practice. Don't do it on your own. That's not a good idea. Don't say, Justin told me to push my limits. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. Eventually, you have to be able to perform to a certain standard, and there's a safe way to do it, and a safe way and a bad way to do it. So choose the right way. But it's difficult. It's really difficult setting those limits and not feeling the pressure or the ego or any of that stuff. So it can be very difficult, especially like you said, when you're 150 hours or 700 hours or whatever you are, it can be hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But that is a really good point too, where it's like sometimes, and I hear this a lot more from like general aviation pilots, like they will have like a 7-knot crosswind limit. And I'm like, you know, if you do want to be a professional pilot, like you said, if you can, if your off spec is, you know, ILS down to 1800 RVR, it's like, you need to be able to do that eventually, maybe not day one, but like pretty soon you need to be able to do that. And you need to be confident that you can safely do that. And if you're not, there needs to be some more training in there somewhere, because that's what we do, like as professional pilots, you know, that's kind of our whole thing.
Yeah, especially flying freight or medevac, PC-12. I can't tell you. I have about 1,000 hours on a PC-12, so yeah. I love flying that airplane. But I've shot so many approaches down a minimum with crappy weather. It's just like eventually, just like you're fine, just like a normal day. Yeah. But yeah, it comes, man. It comes fast too. My question for you is: you said you did CFI for about 2,000 hours. When did you know, or how did you know it was time to kind of move on? Because you mentioned if you could make the money you wanted, you could see yourself just being a CFI. So when did you know it was time to move on?
Yeah, so I worked for initial flight training and screening for the Air Force as a CFI at 700 hours. And I loved that. That was like a real job. You know, you had a salary and benefits and everything. And then, you know, you do anything for like about 500 hours and you're kind of like, okay, not that I got this, but you're like, I'm ready to be pushed again, you know? So I kind of went back to Georgia during COVID and I was doing CFI, I was doing some contract work. And I kind of was realizing, I was like, I really don't have much instrument experience at this point, and I need to kind of build that. I am very confident, like flying VFR with students, but like, at this point, I'm like almost doing myself a disservice because I need to keep learning. So I started looking around. I really wanted to live in Idaho, Wyoming, or Montana. So I was looking for jobs like just out there. And I found the Part 135 PC-12 job. And I was like, I think that's probably the good next step, you know, from mostly CFI experience to a single engine, you know, turbine aircraft. It's like, okay, but it's not a huge airplane. It's not hard to fly, you know? So I went and switched over to that. Little did I know, flying that, it was all single pilot. Like, that is pretty decently high level flying, you know, in Idaho and Montana and the Pacific Northwest and all that. So that was really good. And then I ended up doing the air ambulance from there. And then now I'm at like kind of like one of the unicorn Part 91 jobs. So it's all been through that whole experience. But knowing when it was time to move on, it just kind of, when you're like, yeah, I don't really even need to prepare for this flight. Like, I could show up to any of this, any question a student asks me, I'm pretty much going to know. That's where it's like, okay, we're in the zone where we could get complacent, and really we need to get better. We need to move on to something else at that point.
Yeah. And everyone finds that out on their own different ways too. Just because you found it out 2000 hours, like sometimes you just have a goal to go to a major airline. You just need to progress. You need to take the better job when you can, because it's easy to get complacent. It's easy to be like, you know, this job's not bad enough. And they'll try to talk you into staying, right? They'll try to be like, this is the best you're going to do. We love you. We're a family here, all this kind of stuff. And you'd be like, nope, I need to go. It's got to be crazy going from the Southeast to flying a PC-12 in the Northwest with real mountains. Not saying the Appalachian mountains aren't that big, but these are really big mountains and you're flying very close to them in a lot of airports. And on top of that, the icing that you're going to be getting is way different than what you're probably used to. And you probably didn't have crazy amount of experience with icing in a 172 down in Georgia. So seeing how fast ice can accumulate, and I'm sure you had a crash course on that the very first winter, the very first time, and probably wasn't your favorite flight, I would imagine.
Yeah. My first flight actually as a PC-12 pilot was into Helena, Montana in like basically a blizzard. So it was big lessons learned. I mean, it honestly worked out fine. I did have to like move the flight a little bit because the whole airport closed from freezing rain. So we got
the notums.
Yeah, exactly. We got in and then we didn't get out because it was like, this whole airport's like an ice skating rink. But yeah, I mean, it was a big jump, and it's the same kind of thing you're talking about where it's like, you need to, you know, have the good judgment to know how much can you start pushing your comfort level, and you need to, you know, the first hour of flying and icing in a PC-12 to, you know, where I am now, I know how to get out of it, how to safely navigate it, how much is too much, when to say yes, when to say no, you know? So at that point it was just like, all right, let's send it into Montana and hope for the best. But it's the same thing like with thunder, you know, thunderstorms anywhere. It's like you can fly in the vicinity of them, you just need a way out. So the hard thing with the PC-12, as you know, is you can't go over anything. Like, you're in the weather all the time. So you really have to think and be like, how am I going to navigate this? Because I can't climb over anything. And if it's all the way down to the ground, like, you can't really get out of it that way either. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think our plane only went to 27, but I think the newer ones can go up in the like low 30s, like 31 maybe. I don't know what you guys can do, but
30 is the max, but it really, like, it doesn't do well up there, you know? So.
Yeah. I just remember whenever the ice would get bad in the PC-12, the prop would start shaking, and then you start getting the throttle and kind of moving up to vibrate and get it off. That was, didn't happen many times. So that's when you knew you were in some real bad stuff.
Yeah. When it starts throwing chunks of ice, you're like, what is that noise? And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I flew a Caravan before that, and that plane is notoriously bad for icing. So when I got the PC-12, I felt so much safer and so much better in that bird. And the trailing link gear in the PC-12 was amazing. If you have a bad landing in a PC-12, it would have been a crash in any other airplane.
100%. Yeah. Everybody compliments my landing, so I'm like, that's right. It's just that underinflated tires, but like, well, I'll take it.
That's really funny. Yeah, PC-12 is a great airplane. I had a lot of fun flying that airplane. If I could win the lottery, I'd probably buy a PC-12, but maybe the PC-24 now, depending how rich I get.
Right? Yeah, the 24 looks pretty nice. It's amazing that thing can land like almost as short as the 12. Like,
yeah, it's insane. Pretty cool. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. What do you like most about kind of the job you have now?
So this job is very independent. Like, basically, it's just I have a flight, I show up and I do the flight and I come home. It's a small department. I work for a commercial real estate company, and it's just me and one other pilot, and we're the whole flight department. And we just work really well together, talk about who wants to do what. But it's very much like, you're an adult. If you need a day off, just let me know. I have a lot of free time. There's a lot of balance. So it's a good situation. It's flying the PC-12, and then I'll go to school for the citation coming up here. So I'll be actually able to fly above something for once, which will be nice. But it's just a good group of people, and it's a really good quality of life balance. So, cause I like to do other things, you know, I still like to instruct a little bit on the side, and trying to do some of the social media stuff to kind of like educate and help the aviation community. So, you know, and then have your social life and everything else. Like, it's that, but it is that home most nights job, you know, that I was kind of looking for. So it's been a good fit, and it's a company that I was contracting for a little bit. They just kind of called me out of the blue and made me a great offer. So I'm just happy that I kind of fell into what I was looking for all along, you know? Yeah.
Is it a job that you think you would want to fly forever, or is it a job that's kind of No, I don't really know how you want to answer this because I don't want them to listen to it and be like, wait, she's going to leave. But is it a forever job, or do you think it's more of eventually you want to make your way back to Delta or to Delta, not back to Delta?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I told them is I'm looking for something long term. And if it's this good all the time, I'll stay there. The only thing I did tell them is like, you know, I'll put in an app at Delta. And if they call me, that's probably where I'll go because, you know, that's where my dad works. And I just know it's a great company. And I'd love to fly with my dad, like before he retires. I think that'd be really cool. The only thing with the airlines is like, we live in Boise, Idaho, and we don't want to move.
There you go.
You're going to commute, you know, you're going to fly to Salt Lake or to Seattle, which may not be the worst thing ever. Like that's not a hard commute. But that's part of it. So it's really great where I'm at right now. But like we talked about, I'm like the airlines, I think, you know, I just think there's a ton of opportunity. I think getting on with one that you really are happy with the culture and you have a reasonable commute or you're in base, like, I don't think that's the worst idea either.
And I would imagine most jobs that have either lower time pilots or fly PC-12s, more citations, like they know that most pilots aren't going to stay there for their career. Now there might be the rare pilot that stays and it's just good enough and they make it just good enough, but the majority of pilots, they're well aware, I think, those companies, that they're not going to be able to keep them forever, especially if they know they have a good one. They're like, oh man, this is not going to be a long term. We got to make sure either we give
my intention, like with every company I work for, I'm like, I don't want to ever leave. Like I want to be here forever. And that's, I was very honest with them and told them that too. But like I said, I was like, Delta is probably the only one that would pull me, which, you know, they haven't called me. So if you're a Delta recruiter,
hi, please hire me. That's really funny.
No, but my company is awesome now and they're super good to me. And like I said, it is like the unicorn Part 91 job that everybody looks for, where it's just like you have a ton of time off and you're flying really well maintained airplanes and all the people you work with are super nice. So I'm pretty happy there.
What was the kind of the not scariest, but like the biggest eye opening flight that you've had with flying the PC-12 up in the Northwest?
You know, the air ambulance stuff is just such high level flying. Like there were so many, you wake up in the middle of the night, you know, they call you, you're always flying in bad weather because the helicopters fly in the good weather. You're always going into small rural mountain airports that have no services. You don't even have de-ice there. So you're like trying to figure out how you can get de-iced if you're going to get too much in there. So like we would go to like La Grande, Oregon is a pretty, you know, mountainous airport. It's like in a bowl of mountains. Every time you go in there, the weather's absolute crap. There's a really crappy NDV approach that gets you just, you know, on top of the airport so you can like see it as it goes underneath you on the best approach point, you know. And every single time in there, you're just in moderate turbulence, moderate icing in the middle of the
night. Do not miss that.
It just sucks, you know. So, you know, this, like we said about pushing your limits, it's like you kind of learn when to say yes, when to say no. But a lot of those, you know, a lot of the air ambulance stuff was that way. It was pretty normal. But that's, you know, also was helping those communities a lot because those mountainous towns like did not have the level of care that a lot of them needed. So we'd go get someone that was maybe like in a car accident and take them to Seattle so they could actually get some trauma care. So very rewarding, but like, you know, you do that at 4 a.m. a couple times, like you're pretty done with it.
So. Yeah. I feel like it's a little different when you know you have a patient, you know you have like a mission that you're really like solving something versus you're just flying some freight so a factory can keep going. You know, it's like, I got to get this guy in here, which can be a dangerous attitude to have as well. You can kind of be so focused that you need to get in, you can overlook a lot of things, but it can definitely help with the mission-driven side. And I'm sure since you're in the Army and you kind of enjoy having a mission-driven side to that.
Yeah. And that was like, you know, I think the company I worked for did a really good job of hiring pilots because they want you to have like leadership abilities and basically have the mindset of where you're like, I don't care. Like my job is to safely operate the airplane and I just don't care about anything else. They don't want you to push because there's like someone, so they wouldn't tell you anything about the patient. They did a lot to try to mitigate that. But the challenge with it is like, once you have the patient, they have to either be in the ambulance, the air ambulance, an actual ambulance or a hospital. We can't just like sit on the ramp with them.
Right.
You know? So there's a lot you have to think about where it's like, if you take the flight, you reasonably need to be able to get the patient and get them out of there without much delay, you know.
There's so many things you can't predict. When's the freezing rain going to come? I don't know. When's the year zero going to lift? I don't know. Yeah,
exactly. So that was the challenge. And then, you know, you're trying to be like, okay, well, if I get in there and I get stuck, like, you're just thinking of so many things. And like, you know, like going into Salmon, Idaho in the middle of the night, like, you don't have much margin of error. Like, you have to make the climb gradient on the departure procedure. Like, you have to there. And if you have a certain amount of ice, you won't in a PC-12. So you're trying to figure out what's the tailwind with the winds aloft and like, what's the climb gradient. And you're doing all that right when they call you, trying to do all the math and like make a decision and go. So there's a lot to that job, you know, that was pretty high level. I learned a lot. It made me a much better pilot, but it was like, it was a lot. I was like, okay, time to go do something else, you know.
This is a little bit of a lighter subject, but when you started flying, did you imagine that you'd do social media? Did you imagine that you're going to eventually turn it into like being on camera, doing YouTube, doing Instagram reels?
Yeah, not at all. Like, I basically during COVID, I kind of started doing the TikTok thing a little bit because I was like, this is kind of fun. This could be like a side hustle, like just kind of see what happens from it. And I also just love aviation. So I'm like, let me just like share it with the world. During COVID, like everything on TikTok blew up. So that kind of blew up. And then I kind of put it aside for a couple years because I just felt weird. Like, it is kind of awkward, like being so out there in the world. So I put it aside for a little bit, just kind of left it alone. And then when I met my husband, now he's an entrepreneur. He's in like real estate investing and everything. And he was like, this let's is awesome.
Go. Yeah, come on.
He's like, let's go. Yeah. So,
we got a business plan. We got everything. We're doing this. I need 10 videos a week. Like, let's go.
Yeah. He's just so smart on that stuff, you know? So he was encouraging it, where like other people I had dated before him were like kind of insecure about it and stuff like that. So it was just like, he made it where he was like, this is actually a cool thing, you know, and you love to instruct and you can like teach, you know, upwards of millions of people through social media without like having to do it one-on-one for 1 hour per person. So I've been enjoying it, you know. I kind of put out like educational stuff or just try to share what I've learned about aviation and try to keep it positive and or informative or whatever. And it seems to be people like it, you know, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Boy, love it. How do people find your channels if you want to go ahead and give yourself a little plug?
Yeah, it's Pilot Katie, K-A-I-T-Y, on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. So the YouTube stuff is like picking up. I just started doing that this year. It takes a long time to edit, so just bear with me on that one. But yeah, I post a lot on TikTok and Instagram, a lot, almost every day. So there's usually some fun stuff on there.
As a creator, do you have a creator that you love to watch, or aviation specific or outside of aviation? Do you have anyone that you like are always watching, or you kind of, you know, I don't really watch it. I just kind of do my own thing.
I don't know if I have one specific, like there's so many cool ones. Honestly, the people that I like to watch are like the people I really know. And like they post, you know, they're just daily aviation stuff from their job. I love keeping in touch with like my friends that I've had in the Army, or like, I've had some people reach out now that I'm doing more on Instagram, and there were like instructors of mine that I worked with at IFT for the Air Force. And that's always cool to like have them reach out and be like, hey, we saw your stuff and we just wanted to say like, you were great to work with. Like, it's just all the positive energy is awesome. So that's been my favorite part of it. And then like just connecting with people, like one of the girls I worked with at IFT, she's a pilot for Atlas and she's in Boise on layover. So like, we're going to go get dinner. It's just, you know, it just keeps people connected. Awesome. Yeah.
No, it definitely does. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I have a couple rapid fire questions for you and then we can end it. It's going to be a couple questions and I want you to give me the quickest answer with no explanation that you have. Okay. So whatever you say it is, if it's bad, it doesn't matter. We move on. Sound good?
Okay. All right. Let's do it.
What's your favorite airplane of all time?
So far, it's the PC-12 or a Piper Cub, honestly, into the back.
You got to choose one.
Okay, we're going to go with the 12 then.
All right. What about an airline? Like, if you could fly one airliner, what would you want it to be?
Probably like an A320. I think the Airbus is pretty cool.
What's the ugliest airplane you've ever seen or flown?
The Piaggio's
horrible. Hey, I love it. Something you wish you knew before you became a pilot.
Do the Air Guard instead of the Army.
Who's one person in the industry you'd like to meet most?
You know, I can't even tell you when I've met so many awesome people so far. Yeah. Richard McSpadden would have probably been my favorite, honestly. Okay. It would have been great to meet.
What's your favorite thing about aviation?
I love the community. I love the people and everybody just achieving awesome things and learning and like behaving in their best way, working together. Like that's to me what is the best part of it.
Yeah. What's your favorite flight you've ever flown?
Flew the PC-12 into Stanley, Idaho a couple times. That's a pretty cool one. Dirt runway up in the mountains in the summer. Cool. Yeah, it's beautiful.
What's the hardest flight you've ever flown?
Probably one of the many would be like the medevac in the middle of the night. Yeah. To like into crap
weather. We'll just say medevac in general.
I can't even pick one. All of them, yeah.
What's your favorite airport to land at?
Something backcountry like Smiley Creek in Idaho. Stanley's another good one. Garden Valley. Smiley's pretty good. They've got some airport camping. They've got mountains all around it. Yeah, it's nice.
What's your least favorite airport to land at?
Salt Lake, when they're busy, they can be kind of rude. No offense.
You didn't say it, or I didn't say it. You did. So there you go. What's your least favorite? Or no, I just asked that. Would you rather fly IFR or VFR?
VFR.
Favorite airport food? So if you, let's say you're connecting through Salt Lake or whatever it may be, what's your go-to?
Oh, I'm from Atlanta, so I got to say Chick-fil-A.
Always. Love it. I'm from Charlotte, so not Atlanta, but Southeast. We love our Chick-fil-A, man.
Totally. It's a religion.
Yeah. Would you rather fly over mountains, beach, or the city?
Mountains all day.
Would you rather fly an Airbus or a Boeing?
You know, at this point, I got to say Airbus.
What's your favorite airline livery?
I got to think. I don't know. I can't remember with one, but that's kind of hard. Yeah.
Long trips or short trips?
I like the short ones.
Hardest check ride you've ever had?
I had one that was my recurrent that was like a stress test that they did. It was a little like, yeah, they went a little over the top. So.
Yikes, that's never fun. Some people make recurrents way harder than they need to be.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot and I passed, yeah. So that's all that matters.
What is the biggest regret in your career, if you have one?
I would go back, I would do Air Guard, and then I would go straight to an airline.
What is the biggest win of your career so far?
Some of my students that I've helped, like one of the international students that I helped teach him English, and he's about to go to a major airline right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Would you rather fly 141 or part 61?
Part 61's all the way for me.
And what's your favorite airline? We're prior to know the answer.
Delta Airlines.
There you go. All right, Katie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you coming on. This will come out in a couple of weeks, and it'll be a good one. I think it's really cool that you're able to not have any loans for your training. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's
great. Oh, yeah.
I'm glad to hear you're moving on. That's exciting. Hope it goes doing really it. Well.
Yeah, yeah, we're doing it. Keep updating your app at Delta. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah. Which one is it? Are you going to say eventually where you're
going? Yeah, I'll say it eventually. I'm just not going to say it when it's still recording.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Please leave a review on iTunes and Spotify. Spotify, we have 805 reviews. Let's get closer to 900 if we can. It'll be sick. But it's still crazy to think that there's that many reviews. I appreciate all y'all listening to this and listening to the story. And now as we move on to the 121 world. So Aviation, I hope you're having a great day. And as always, happy flying. Pilot to Pilot LLC is compensated to make recommendations to his or her followers regarding the services of RAA or Allworth Airline Advisors, companies of Allworth Financial, LP, or Allworth. Promoter is not an employee or investment advisor representative of Allworth. Promoter is a current client of Allworth. Allworth pays promoter a fee of $4,000 a month for sponsorship of the Pilot to Pilot podcast. Due to the compensation arrangement between Allworth and promoter, promoter has an incentive to recommend Allworth, resulting in material conflict of interest. Promoter's role on behalf of Allworth is limited strictly to making recommendations regarding the services of Allworth, introducing or referring prospective clients to Allworth. Promoter has no responsibility with respect to Allworth's investment advisor or other advisory services.